Our reading this morning is from the Reverend David Breeden, and it's based on a poem by the Zen monk Russo Sosiki. I dug and dug deeper into the earth, looking for blue heaven, choking always on piles of dust rising. Then once at midnight, I slipped into the sky. This month our theme is mystery, and today we are going to consider the mystery of darkness. When I was 7, my family moved to the country where my parents worked to live lightly on the land. Part of the plan was to have outdoor composting toilets, since my parents found septic systems to be a waste of good fertilizer. These turned out to be almost exactly like outhouses to my 7-year-old mind, besides being completely embarrassing if I wanted to invite a friend over. There was the problem of mid-winter visits, which required a coat and boots. And there was also the problem of night visits, which required climbing out of bed, creeping through the house, and then dashing madly through the dark. I remember one particularly traumatizing period when I was reading this book of creepy, crawly tales that claimed to be absolutely true, and I would read late, and then I would push the book aside, turn off the light, and lay rigid while waiting to sleep, and then I would have to go. I would wait and wait and wait, hoping I would fall asleep, hoping it wasn't true, but every time my body demanded relief, and I would slowly get out of bed and then rush for the door. As I dashed into the night, my heart pounding, panic rising in my chest, I could feel the prickly something watching me from my back, something that wanted to hurt me. The dark was terrifying. As a culture, Americans are afraid of the dark. Since it became possible just over 100 years ago to truly light things up, we have worked hard to banish the dark of night. In many ways, we have been completely successful. When dark descends, we light our homes, our streets, and our empty buildings. Cities seen from above are lit 24 hours a day. When I grew up in the country, there were no lights at night, except the moon and the stars. As an adult, I lived in the country again, and our across-the-street neighbors had a bright light that shone across the street, across acres, into our living room and our daughter and son's bedroom. Later, I moved to town, and I was, for the first time in my life, so close to neighbors that if any two of us would have held hands, we could span the distance between our houses. And one of the neighbors turned on this ferociously bright light every evening. It was so light that even with the blinds pulled on my house, I could traverse it easily at 1 a.m. I am sure that that light made both sets of my neighbors feel safe. Light generally does. It keeps away all that lurks in the dark, or so we think it does. It turns out that according to research, the connection between light and safety is tenuous at best. It is not at all clear that the lights keep away those things and those people that we don't want to visit us. In fact, it could make the journey to our doors just that much easier. Light only makes us feel safe because we believe it makes us safe, whether this is true or whether it's not. What is for sure true is that darkness comes. It is predictable. It is an absolutely normal part of life. Each day is followed by night. The long days of summer are followed by the long nights of winter. Here today in Portland, we will have 8 hours and 56 minutes of daylight, which means 15 hours and 4 minutes of darkness. And we will gain 11 more minutes of night before the solstice. We are right now busy lighting this dark up. We string colored lights on our homes. We add candles and other trees to our living rooms. We put up Christmas trees with lights in our windows. We light more fires. All December, we light up the physical darkness, pushing it further out, far from us, as if it as if to stop its extension over us. Americans aren't just afraid of the darkness of night. The other darknesses scare us even more. Fear, pain, loneliness, rejection, anger, emptiness, hunger, despair, depression, hopelessness, meaninglessness, sadness. These darknesses descend as regularly as the night in our lives. The timing just isn't as predictable, but events happen that drag us into the dark. Part of being human is to suffer, and the causes of suffering are as predictable as death, wars, divorces, layoffs, illnesses, plagues, low-paying work, oppression, lack of food. We descend into the dark, battering ourselves against the cold harshness of what is happening, the sudden death or the not-so-sudden death of someone we loved and truly counted on, our body betraying us, hurting us, and not letting us be who we have always been. The abandonment of someone we trusted. Our job disappearing, the money vanishing in gulps until the apartment is gone and the food is scarce and we are hungry and living in our car. Our own inability to catch hold in the world and be who we thought we were supposed to be. Any of this and more, and we descend into the dark. And we sob, and we rage, and we become rigid with fear. We go limp, unable to move. We whirl through painful emotions. We can't see in the dark. We can't see where we are. We can't see where we're going. We can't see what is coming. We can't see how to get out. We push as hard as we can against it, like we do the dark of winter, so we can just get it away from us. Emotional and spiritual dark is scary, and it's hard. We run, we freeze, we fight. People use drugs, prescription, non-prescription, illegal drugs. Others drink or spend too much money, or just get busier and busier, as if franticness could keep it at bay. We pull into ourselves, or are frantic to keep any person near us all the time, so we are never alone. We descend into the dark when we are afraid, when we lose what we hold dear, and when we cannot make the world behave the way we think it should. We descend into the dark when our lives fall apart, and nothing works the way we thought it should. One of the most important spiritual books on the emotional and spiritual dark was written by John the Cross in the late 16th century. John was a monk and became active in reforming the convents and monasteries of his time, and the church authorities were not happy about it. After many warnings, he was abducted by church leadership and thrown into a monastery prison. There his jailers fed him small portions of bread and water, did not allow him to bathe, and released him from his cell only to be methodically beaten by other monks. After 2 months, he was put into solitary confinement, where the only a sliver of light came into his cell. He lived there for 9 months until he escaped. John's life, I think we would all agree, had fallen apart. He was helpless, and he suffered physical pain and emotional anguish. Furthermore, he had devoted his life to God. And where was God in this horror? What John learned is he couldn't exactly find God. He couldn't grab on to God and find his way to a better place. He didn't discover that God had a plan or that God would hold him in his pain and save him if he had faith. Instead, he learned that God is nothing. God is no thing, he said. Since God is not a thing, God cannot be defined or grasped or fulfill roles such as saving that humans had attributed to the deity. Instead, he found that God could only be encountered. He spent his 11 months in the physical and painful dark, learning how to encounter God and leaving behind his desire to find and grasp for a God that he could understand. So what might John's revelations mean to us as 21st century Unitarian Universalists who lack any affinity for the God language or God concept of John the Cross? The basic lesson, I think, still applies. When we find ourselves in the emotional and spiritual dark, we learn that what we grasped and believed was true about how life and the world worked isn't true. We learn that what we grasped onto to guide us wasn't real. It was no thing, nothing. Instead of something real, we grasped at stories that made us feel in control so that we would have a good life. Maybe we had believed if we took good care of ourselves that we wouldn't get cancer. Or that if we were a good person, nothing horrible would happen to us. We thought if we treated people well, they would treat us well in return. We believed if we worked hard, we would be successful. We would be happy. When we are in the dark and let ourselves be there without steam or pushing away, we learn something else entirely, said John the Cross. We learned that the rules about life that we grasped and held tightly to were not real. They were no thing. They were nothing. And they couldn't get us out. It turns out that if we take great care of ourselves, we will still get cancer. If we are the best person we know how to be, we can still suffer grievous losses and pain. If we treat people well, they might spit in our face anyway. If we work hard, we may never experience financial success or even security or even happiness. All we have, according to John the Cross, is to truly experience our lives and sometimes to experience something else, something undefinably greater than us that we can never name or understand. What happens in that dark night, say the great spiritual teachers and a few modern psychologists as well, is to discover we live in a world that can hurt us and we cannot control. If all goes well as we traverse the night, they tell us, we will come out the other side kinder and more compassionate and more loving. We discover there are no other meaningful ways of being. What hurts you blesses you, says Rumi. Darkness is your candle. When it is dark enough, says Ralph Waldo Emerson, you can see the stars. How do we traverse the dark? American culture teaches that you should take a flashlight. Whenever I am outside at night, people press me to use a flashlight. Unless the dark is so pitch black I can't make out a tree an arm's length away, I nearly always refuse. I find the light of a flashlight confusing. Every night of my childhood, I walked into the dark to the outhouse without artificial light. And while I had periods of fearing the dark, I certainly learned how to walk in it. I learned, if I paid attention, that the night wasn't that dark, and I could see well enough. The light of a flashlight is such a small thing, a splash of yellow on the ground in front of me. My pupils shrink as I watch that bobbing light. Everything not within that small patch becomes darker. I am blind and closed in. I can't see the landscape. I can't see anyone coming. I can only see a few steps in front of me, and the dark begins to feel threatening. We try to help people in the dark with all sorts of flashlights. Advice, usually. Stories of other successes. And frequently, self-help books. The problems with these flashlights is they focus all the person's attention on one particular place in the dark landscape, and the rest gets larger and darker. Barbara Brown Taylor, an Episcopal priest, wrote a book called Learning to Walk in the Dark. And in the last chapter she says, as the reader might not have gathered this is not a how-to book. But then she goes on to say helpfully, but if it were, the only instruction would be to become more curious about your own darkness. She asks, what can you learn about your fear of it by staying with it a moment? Where do you feel the darkness in your body? What stories do you tell yourself that keeps that fear and that pain in place? Be curious, she says. Learn about the darkness in you and around you. Learn the mystery of your own darkness. I understand now that that's what I did as a child. I journeyed back and forth to the outhouse. I knew that familiar path in the day and in the night. And somehow, it became richer, more intriguing, because I saw it in the dark and under the moon, and as well as in the night of day. I learned the lesson of curiosity again when I suffered for 13 years with PMDD, which is the migraine version of PMS. I was dreadfully ill. After suffering from debilitating headaches and a dark, heavy depression that lasted anywhere from 2 days to 10 days every single month. And I was miserable. And I kept fighting it. I railed against the unfairness and the pain. If you had a flashlight, I took it. Doctors, naturopaths, acupuncturists, vitamins, herbs, exercises, diets. Not much of it helped, and I remained very ill. I did get curious about my experience, though, about how it felt, about all the various ways experts framed it, and how people reacted when they couldn't fix me. Quite interestingly, they really got really mad at me. I also learned every single month for years how to enter a dark so heavy and breathless that it sometimes felt like death itself. And then in a hormonal moment of grace, it released me into a light so bright that I felt like I was sparkling with champagne. Month after month, I died, and I came to life. And I learned to have faith that light would return. I learned also not to judge. I can never know another's pain or how difficult it is for them to show up. I know for me, during those years, showing up and presenting in any way that seemed normal was extremely hard. However, I doubt most people couldn't tell that I was suffering. I became so good at putting on that cloak of normalcy. However, it didn't take much to push me off center. I learned that there was nothing I could grab on to save me. Nothing made me better. no God, no person, no science or drug or medical treatment, no counselor or proven mental health protocol. I understand, John LaCrosse. All there were encounters with things I could not grasp or hold on to. But these were encounters that mattered. They came like warm, gentle breath. They came when I stopped fighting and just breathed in and out slowly. They came from kindness, a being with no exception that I would get better or that I would buck up and try whatever flashlight that particular person was sure would banish my pain. A hug, a warm hug, a smile, a welcoming way, space so I could sleep with no expectation that I would get anything done. Quiet humor. Those all made me feel normal and part of a caring world. In those moments, I was so nourished by love. And in that nourishment, I found small sprigs of strength and of courage. I like the dark of winter. I like coming inside, closing the curtains, lighting a fire. The other afternoon, before dinner, after dark, my daughter and I curled up on the couch and finished a book. It was so cozy. The dark laughed at us as we descended into the book, enjoying the surprising plot twists and laughing at the antics of the characters we had come to love. I am sad that I live in a culture where turning on bright lights everywhere is considered safety, so that I have to travel far to really see the stars. I don't like the pain of emotional and spiritual dark. My first reaction is to fight it with whatever flashlight is nearby. But I still carry within me those lessons of those 13 years, that if I get still enough and stop seeking a bright light, that descent can come with its own gifts. Encounters that can glow like the moon, casting into my being love and courage and strength. In the Northern Hemisphere, it is the time of the dark. It is the time of the night. And I hope that each of us takes time from the loud, bright holidays to notice the dark's particular beauty. So today is the first Sunday of Advent, and it is the tradition of Advent to light candles each day, each Sunday of the Advent year, to remember that as we wait in the dark, the bright light is coming. Anyway, so we do have some time for some questions. If anyone?
Just raise your hand, I'll bring the mic.
I think silence is a good way of working with the dark myself.
The year has many cycles, and I think that there's always a feeling of anticipation of things that are drawing near, and I really can't. Ignore the feelings I'm having about, you know, my son starting to think about college. I just feel like that's kind of my new Advent calendar is kind of like, oh gosh, it's coming.
Hi, directly, indirectly about the dark. A long time ago, I did a stint in the Navy, and I did a year and a half on a ship in Pearl Harbor and around. And I didn't realize it until I got home in Georgia, but I missed the seasons. Hawaii doesn't have any of that. It has wet and dry, but that's it.
I think that one thing to talk about the dark of this particular season is that I think David's word anticipation made me think of this particular dark that we'll also be talking about on Wednesday, which is, you know, Christmas is a season of anticipation of much goodness. And that isn't always how it works out. And so I think sometimes we hold ghosts of Christmas past in us. I think the Christmas carol often speaks to us because we do have ghosts of Christmas past sometimes that were truly fabulous and sometimes just really weren't. And so just want to hold that particular darkness for us right now.
When you talked about the darkness, your personal dark night, that really touched me because I've been there, and you do change the way you think about things and completely reconstruct sometimes your whole worldview. And to realize that no matter how good you are, no matter how hard you work, it might not be okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's a life lesson that's really important but very difficult to learn. And it changes who you are. But that part, I just want to thank you for that part because it was really touching for me.
You're welcome. My husband, I missed Joys and Sorrows this morning. You ran a little bit late, but during this time of dark, I just wanted to mention that we both lived in Alaska for about 6 years, and they're going into the dark season right now, and I have friends who, their lives are just being shattered, so hold space for them, you know, say prayers for them, donate efforts to help them through their challenges right now.
Thank you for that.
Since you said we could reference back a ways, something that this tied into for me was the memories, the service you gave on memories, because sometimes those can appear darker or lighter than they actually were. And I was struck by the accounts you gave of the 9/11 stories that people had written and then being shown at it, what is a year later or something, and why would I have lied about that? And how our memories really change you know, what we view and how dark some things are and how light other things are, especially when you remember as a kid. For me, I know as I've gotten older and going back home to Iowa, that, oh, man, things seemed bigger or brighter or more fun, and they shrunk as I got older or, you know. It was the people that surrounded me that made things happier, as you talked about with the happiness and the flashlight being the hugs and the smiles and things like that, so. I like some of the ties in with that to me.
Thank you.
I had a truly crummy childhood, and I was also a huge reader of science fiction beginning at age 6. And it didn't take me long to realize that what we think of as light is a product of our particular situation. You know, we face a star, and we have an atmosphere that diffuses it around and makes it seem as though the world is bright. Well, in fact, it occurred to me that almost the entire universe is dark. This little part of this little ball that's light is the exception. And that didn't frighten me. It seemed peaceful. So for me, darkness has never been an enemy. It's been things settling in, things being peaceful. I like the dark.
I think that's a beautiful thing to say. And both of our hymns today talked about that. And when you think about dark as being like where the seeds are planted and grow, the womb is dark, there's so many peaceful growing places. It's not just pain, and dark is a metaphor for pain, of course, which is where I focus today. But yes, there is that blessing also of darkness, of going in, of being still and peaceful. That's also a characteristic of the dark. So thank you for
that. Thank you, Tracy.